Hey everybody, thank you for joining. My name is Joe Sack and I am a program manager for the SQL Server product team and Azure SQL DB. And right now my focus is on the Query Optimizer, but I've also done a lot of work with customers in SQL Server R services. I did that as part of the SQL CAT team. That's a customer advisory team, and we work with customers in preview versions, for example, SQL Server 2016. And this is where I met my colleague here today, Justin Silver. He's a scientist from PROS Inc. And today we're specifically going to talk about how we took a two-day process and reduced it down to less than 1 hour. And less than 1 hour in SQL Server R services versus an open source R equivalent, okay? So for the agenda, we have about 45 minutes. Justin is gonna go over his scenario. So he had a lot of advanced analytics scenarios to choose from, and he chose one that was a canonical example that he could bring to the lab. These labs in Redmond range anywhere from 1 week to even up to a month. And what we do from a product team perspective is we try to get very realistic workloads from customers into the lab. We have key folks like Justin in the room to help work with us and see whether we can optimize the workload. We learn a lot about the product, and that product feedback flows to the actual product itself. So in this case, we started working from CTP3 and onward with SQL Server R services. So a lot of the feedback that PROS Inc. was able to provide made it into general availability. During the lab, I just want to mention, we had another colleague, so Justin is the scientist, but we also had Peter Tran, who was a data architect from PROS Inc. We also had Denzel Ribeiro, who was a SQL CAT program manager. And then we had a lot of input from the SQL Server, our product team, that would flow in throughout the week. So we're going to tell you about the overall experience, some of the legacy pain points, so what would motivate PROS Inc. to move from their current advanced analytics solution to SQL Server R services. And then we'll talk about how we were able to get it down from 2 days to less than 1 hour. So we'll talk about specific tips and tricks. And finally, I'll give a link to the SQL CAT blog, and we go through in great detail. It's a blog post, but it's actually like a mini white paper, and it goes into great detail about how you can optimize your own workloads. If you're a DBA or a data architect, how can you do a similar scenario, a proof of concept? Or if you're a database scientist or data scientist, if you have some recommendations for actually working with the DBA team, we give advice at the end about that as well. So with that said, I'll hand it over to Justin. So here we go.
All right, thank you so much, Joe, and thank you everyone for joining today. It's great to be here, and great to see so many great faces in the audience, some familiar faces, now familiar at least. So before I tell you about our specific use case with SQL R services, I want to give you a little bit of a flavor about what type of business PROS does. And even before that, I'll tell you a little bit about what our science organization looks like. So my title is scientist, because you know data scientist isn't vague enough, so we have to just take it a little bit more ambiguous than that and just be scientists. I get the joke a lot when I was actually at the last conference. So what kind of scientist are you? Are you a chemist? Are you a biologist? No, I'm a data scientist, but we don't want to be put in that bucket necessarily. But by and large, that's what we do. So what does PROS do? Well, at the end of the day, we help businesses be more successful. We help them make more money. So we help them improve their margins, their profits. We span a number of industries. The company actually got started back in the late 80s working with airlines. So after the once the airline industry was deregulated, there was certainly a very large need for airlines to have revenue management systems and to be able to identify the appropriate prices for their flights. So if you flew here to this conference, all I can say is you're welcome, I guess. or sorry, I don't know. Neither one in my case, but revenue management is part of the business. We do pricing optimization as well. It sounds really fancy, but what it really is we help give customers data-driven price guidance. And this spans, as I mentioned, a number of industries. So we cover manufacturing, distribution, services. So we've really kind of gotten ourselves involved in a lot of areas. We also support sales. In addition to pricing organizations, we support sales organizations. So you can see some things up here, like we help reduce quote turnaround times, improving sales cycle durations, and helping organizations increase their margins, dealing with really complex product catalogs, so companies that manage a very large number of products and have large customer bases. If you think about the interaction between all of those combinations, that screams like a big data problem, doesn't it? And so that's where we really can inject ourselves and add a lot of value. So that's what PROS is. And so the problem that we're going to focus on is actually on the pricing side. So I'm not going to talk about the airline stuff. Sorry if that's what you're interested in hearing about. Can always tell you more about our airline work at a later point. But I'm going to focus more on the pricing side, because that problem, as Joe mentioned, really was kind of a canonical problem that was very suitable to try to map the process over to doing something with SQL Server R services, and also getting a lot of improvement on the current process that we have. So I'll tell you about the process and also some of the pain points that we're dealing with, really be realistic and tell you what we were facing and how we were able to improve on that. So the foundation for what we do for pricing is something that's pretty fundamental to businesses, which is a segmentation. So you may have heard the term before, maybe more from a marketing perspective about a segmentation, when you're essentially trying to profile your customers according to some characteristics. So you may think, okay, they're a large revenue customer and they're in the Northwest region, right? So that's one way that you could, those are two types of features that you could use to classify your customers, right? Revenue and geography. But you could think about a whole number of other possible attributes that you could use to classify your customers. You could also think of attributes that describe the products that you sell. So maybe it's a classification of the products. They belong to some hierarchy or product family. They have other characteristics and buying patterns. The transactions themselves also may have certain characteristics and attributes. Maybe the volume of the transaction is important. So what we try to do is we take all of these possible attributes of the customers, of the products, of the transactions, and when we get together with the business and figure out what are all the possibilities, what we then need to do is say, okay, let's narrow that down. Let's whittle it down to what are the actually essential and important attributes, not just from a business standpoint, but also from a statistical standpoint. When we look at the data, what are we really seeing as indicative of driving variation in pricing historically? That's what we want to see, right? We want to look at the transactions and say, okay, these are the things that really drive that variation. And then moving forward, we want to build a model that's going to be predictive and help drive very good, intelligent pricing. So in order to do that, we want that model to be robust. And so obviously, statistical considerations are important, but it also has to align with what the business strategy needs to look like. So you can kind of see the interplay with the data, the business, and the iterative discussions that happen. So there's a lot of back and forth in this, and it makes it a really beneficial process for the business. But of course, there's a lot of handoff of steps. And that's, I'll get to that a little bit later about how we can use SQL Server R services from the data crunching standpoint to really improve on processes. So the segmentation that I was just discussing really provides that foundation, because what you're trying to do is say, I've got a group of customers that have a similar willingness to pay for these particular products under these certain transactional conditions. And then I can say, okay, this is my range of prices. And typically for a salesperson, they'll think about it as three benchmarks. You'll have sort of a floor price, don't go below that, the target, which is kind of where you want to hit, and then the expert, if you're, we call it expert because we say it's for your expert salespeople that can really get to that high mark. So the foundation is the segmentation. That's where a lot of the big data and the crunching and considering the large transaction sets, trying to identify what those appropriate attributes are and understanding all the interactions between them. So that gets us to that pricing situation. Now, there are some challenges associated with this process as we had it, at least previously. Now, this process, as I mentioned, required a lot of handoff. So again, the goal of what we're trying to do is we're trying to figure out what that appropriate set of business attributes is, and then model that in order to come up with that segmentation model. And again, the goal is to provide whatever those intelligent pricing benchmarks should be for future transactions. So we get the data from the customer. This is how things were working. We would get the data from the customer, and that might go to some other team within our organization. And then the data would then have to come to us as scientists, and in order for us to be able to run the science models that we had in our possession, We'd have to bring the data into our system. So that could be me running it on a laptop, for example, or using some other performance server that we may have access to. Either way, there was movement of data happening. So anytime you're moving data around, we know that that can take some time, especially if you don't get it the way you expect it. And from a science standpoint, I can say that that happens quite often, that you have an expectation about what the data is going to look like based on what you hear, and then you get it, and you take a look, and you see, actually, no, that's not what I expected. There's quite a few things that are missing, or this column isn't what it should be, or right, there's mismatches. And so anytime there's that movement, you're going to be delayed quite a bit, especially if there's going to be back and forth. So anytime you can cut down on the movement of data, that's a huge benefit. And of course, with SQL Server, with the R services with SQL Server, certainly that's one of the huge benefits of that solution. So again, the data gets to us, and then we have to run the science. We have to get the models applied to that data. So the process of getting that segmentation model really consists of three steps. So first, it's the selection of the attributes, right? I was telling you, okay, we may have 50 or 100 possible business attributes to describe what's going on, customer, product, transaction attributes. We need to narrow it down. So we may want to do some statistical analysis and say, these are the 10 attributes that are really important, and then go back and forth and discuss with the customer, does this make sense? Are you okay with this? Does this make sense from a business standpoint, et cetera? So there's that attribute selection. Once we have agreed on that set of attributes, we'll build that segmentation model. So, okay, if it just so happens it is geography and customer revenue, what are the combinations of those that we should be forming? So is it Northwest with large revenue? Is it Northwest put with Northeast with large and medium revenue? What are the cutoffs and all those kinds of decisions that need to be made for the model to be formed? And then we'll actually build that model out. So once again, once we have that foundation of the model, we can score new observations. So I get a new transaction tomorrow, according to its attributes, okay, it's a customer in the Northwest, it's a large revenue customer, that's segment 22, right? Profile the results. So we call that scoring. New observations come in and we apply the model to them. So that's the data science process. So there was room for improvement with that process as well, actually. Based on the size of data that we are working with, in some cases, our customers have, in the hundreds of millions of transactions that we're dealing with. And it's not just the size of the transaction set, it's also the characteristics of the data, right? So in a lot of cases, we're working with columns or features or attributes, all of these terms can be used interchangeably, that have string value, for example. So you may have a geography attribute that has a couple of hundred different values that it takes. Now you can imagine when you're crunching on that and you're trying to figure out what the right combinations of things are, there are a lot of ways that you can put these things together. The combinations really blow up once you get beyond a certain point. So there's a lot of intense computation that needs to happen to produce these models. And with what we were doing in the past, we had some C++ code, and we were running models using that. We certainly saw a lot of room to improve from a performance standpoint on the science. So there was the handoff of the data, which certainly could have used some improvement, and there was also the science process itself that we could stand to improve in terms of performance. And finally, the final piece of the story on that end is actually getting the results of the model into a production environment, right? So I've fit a science model, I've applied this statistics, I've gotten the segmentation. Now I need to deliver the results to the customer. It's great that I've had fun doing this, it's been a fun exercise, but I mean, it's not academic. I need to get it back to the customer. They're using it for their business, they need to be able to see the results, look at visualizations, right? Have a UI and interact with it, all those things. And so there was an additional handoff that needed to happen. Once I'm done, my work is done, I've built the model, I need to then hand it back off to the product. And we were doing this through a back-end configuration using some configuration files. So again, room for improvement there, right? If you can think about having an R model that's ready for production once you've built it and it's just there to be consumed, that's certainly a very appealing opportunity. So again, thinking about those three elements, right? The handoff of data, the movement of data, the performance of the science model itself, and then the actual productization of the model. Those three elements, and when you think about a solution for that, SQL Server R Services addresses all three of those elements and does it so very well. So I think I've already hit on these points pretty hard, so I won't harp on this too much, but it really just summarizes what I just said. So it's bringing the data science to the data, right? Connecting the data science with the products, and then being able to generate those results much more quickly, because our customers need to make decisions very fast, right? They need to price transactions as they come in. So this is essentially near real-time behavior that needs to happen. So the profiling of the segments and the application of the pricing logic, all these things need to happen very rapidly. But we also need to make sure that we're getting good results, right? So that's why, as Joe was mentioning with our engagement when we were working in the lab, it was really crucial that we had, so my DBA, our architect was there, and myself, and then Joe and another colleague, Denzel Ribeiro, all of us working together, and Joe will talk about the process that we had to make things pretty efficient and working together to solve the problem that we were solving. But having those different perspectives represented and the different representatives, especially for this particular solution, because it does touch on the database side of things, obviously quite a bit, and it touches on the data science side quite a bit. So really the intersection of the two. So having that balance of perspectives is really important. I couldn't begin to get into the nitty-gritty details of database administration, and on the flip side, I imagine my colleague Peter doesn't want to get into random forests and decision trees and things of that nature. So again, having the two perspectives present certainly was a big part of our success in this engagement.
So I'd like to get a quick poll. How many folks have used R before? Okay, couple hands. And how many SQL Server R services? I would assume it'd be a subset of the superset. So, okay, so let me give a little background about R. We've been talking about it from the get-go, but I wanted you to have the scenario from Justin first. Think about R not just as a language, but as an actual statistical programming environment. So that means you have visualizations, you have a lot of the common statistical packages, you have, the actual slide says 8,000 packages out in a common repository. It's actually 9,000 as of today. More than 9,000 open source packages that you can download, and it's across different industries. So if you're in healthcare, finance, manufacturing, it's out there already. If there's a problem that you want to solve, check on CRAN, and then you bring in that package. You have the associated sample data sets, you have statistical functions, and so on. So from a science perspective or a statistician perspective, you can get going very quickly. I can download R tools for Visual Studio or R Studio, and then just download my packages and start modeling as soon as possible. So there's a lot of appeal for this for the statistician and data science population. The slide says 2 million plus. And from a DBA perspective, I've been pitching this a lot. I've been working with SQL Server for several years, and there are a lot of opportunities as DBAs to be using R and a lot of the powerful visualizations. And just planting a few examples, think about query store. If I have a query store result set, in one case we had a lab with a different customer and we were looking at compatibility level 120 versus 130 and trying to visualize that. Well, to do that very well and out of the box, I used a package called ggplot2. And it allowed us to take a look at, okay, where were some potential regressions from 110 to 120 to 130, throw in 4199 trace flag in the mix, and really be able to articulate that. And somebody already put the work in, and it was open source, and we were able to leverage it right away. So a lot of appeal, and one of the big reasons, so talking to Justin just the other day, I said, how many folks on your team use R? And he said, quite a few. Everybody's got their language preference of choice, but when it comes to research and academia, R seems to be the core language choice. So with that said, there are motivating factors for why people would want to step outside of open source R. So when I was talking about CRAN, we were talking about a scenario where that's 9,000 packages I can download now. I have a lot of statistical functions. For example, LM function lets you do linear regression. Well, a lot of these functions are single-threaded, and they require that any data set that you're working with to generate your model has to be in memory. So from a data scientist or statistician perspective, you may or may not have a large enough workstation, but chances are you don't. And what's more, you're dragging across every row across the line. So example for the PROS Inc. data set, they had 20 million rows. Think of that, dragging across the line. I'm having to perform segmentation. I'm having to generate a model and use prediction. And think of how many times you might be exploring your result set before you actually get the model that you want. So there's a lot of churn going back and forth just from the single-threaded and memory-constrained nature of a lot of these open source R functions. Another theme that we saw, and not just with PROS Inc., but across customers that we were working with during the preview program was around data leaving the trust boundary. So I might be a data scientist in team A, you may have a statistician over here, you may have a risk team, you may have a quant team, and they all have different versions of the truth. And all of a sudden you have people with their own data sets on their own servers or what's more on their own workstation. And we're not working from the centralized version of the data that could have been scrubbed in a more efficient way by the DBA or architect already. So we did see that theme where you start to connect the two different competencies or the two different roles, statistician and data architect, and all of a sudden there's this awareness of, oh, I didn't know you already had that result set. So a lot of discovery, even just from combining the worlds. Solutions not easily operationalized. Justin pointed to this a little bit, but you have a model that's working. How do you get it to run in production? How do I generate that model once a month and then start scoring against it on a daily basis? What are the interfaces for doing that? One theme we saw with customers was around refactoring. So they would have something working in R, and then they would rewrite it for Java or C++. So all of a sudden, you don't really actually have the true fidelity to the original code. You know this was working, but now you have to go through a separate validation process, which is not time efficient. You're losing some fidelity on the way to production. And then even the scheduling of it is an open question as well. I talked a little bit about data scientists and data architects working together. You may already have a cleansed data set. Another aspect is there are economies of effort from a DBA perspective and from somebody who uses R. Example I give is aggregate function. There's something called aggregate in R, and if you were to run that to aggregate, let's say I want to show sales by a specific store, so I want to show all sales by store, using the aggregate function in R is not very efficient versus an equivalent where you're doing just a group by in T-SQL. So one theme we saw across customers were opportunities where, hey, we're doing this data cleansing in R, but we could actually take it out and do some of that pre-processing in T-SQL and get very, very high gains. And on the flip side, from a data architect perspective, if you're performing advanced analytic functions in T-SQL, that's not always the most optimal way to do it. And one example I have is the linear regression, the LM function I'm talking about. I think if you go out on Stack Overflow, you'll find this example where somebody did it in T-SQL. And it works, but it's brittle, it's not really extensible, it's many, many lines of code, versus an R equivalent where it's just one little function, you do your dependent and independent variables, you might designate a method, but it's one line of code. So similarly, if as a data architect or DBA, if you see these patterns that could be ported over to R equivalents, that's another quick win. So some common pain points with open source R. So hence SQL Server R services, starting with 2016, we have in database R, and what that means is from a data scientist perspective, and then we'll get to the database developer. As a data scientist, if you install SQL Server 2016 and you select the in-database option and you have R running on the SQL Server instance, I can, from my IDE of choice, whether it's RTools or Visual Studio or RStudio, I can do my modeling where it pushes the compute context to the SQL Server machine itself. So I'm not dragging the rows across the line. I'm using the CPU, the memory, the IO bandwidth of the remote server. And you think about this, it's localized to the SQL Server instance that's co-located with the data that you needed anyhow. So from a data scientist perspective, they still get to use the tools of choice, but they just say, look, I want to do RX compute context, and I want to use the server. Another aspect is for SQL Server R services, it comes with scale R packages, which are a set of optimized commonly used statistical equivalents. So I mentioned LM, the scale R package has something called RX line mod. So it's optimized for parallelism, for batching, so you don't need all rows in memory. So even if you have a beefy server, you wouldn't necessarily need it because it can work with chunks of row sets instead of having to require everything to be memory resident. So two big benefits to the data scientist. And then from a database developer, all right, I'm working with a statistician or a scientist, and they say, I have a model that I would like you to put in production, or I would like you to generate this model on a recurring basis. There's a new interface, a T-SQL interface called SP Execute External Script, and it takes your R, and it allows you to designate your input data set. So if I have my specific row set of the 20 million rows, I designate that as an argument. If I want more than one result set to be ingested as part of the process, I can use commands within the R script itself to ingest it, again, done locally on the SQL Server instance. So now you can encapsulate SP Execute External Script in stored procedures. You can use it in your regular code. In our example, we're actually encapsulating it in, I want to generate my attributes. That's in a stored procedure. You can persist it to a table. I can then generate my model based on those attributes. That model gets persisted to a table. I can then score against rows. I can pull that model from the table. And in each case, we're using SB execute external script. Okay, and I'll have a link at the very end where you can learn more about SQL Server R services all up. All right. So with that said, I talked about we had a lab engagement. With SQL Server 2016 preview program, we have customers come in so that we have real workloads and get proper feedback while there's still time to get it into general availability. And I already mentioned that it was a one-week engagement. And because we had all the right people in the room, and it took a team of folks because we were learning new things. However, and I do have to say this, it won't take a team of folks to do this moving forward because best practices are starting to flow out. But we had the key folks, we had Justin, we had Peter, we had folks in the product team. And the whole goal was, hey, can we optimize this workload? And we had no idea of how far we could get from the 2 day down to the 1 hour. We did not realize we would be able to get that much of a performance improvement. But the idea was, is there a benefit? That was the hypothesis, that there may be a benefit for moving this to SQL Server R services. And what's more, some of the functions that Justin was using had scale R equivalents. So he'll talk a little bit more about the forest and the tree algorithms that were out there. But this is another marker that if you are a statistician, a data scientist, or you're a data architect DBA, look for patterns where you see there may be equivalence that's documented for scale R. If you see a match, it might be a very quick win. All right. So in terms of the workflow, this is what we found worked very well in. And this actually has combined feedback from other customer engagements over the preview program. And when you see this, it might seem obvious. It might seem like common sense. But there's a temptation when you have 1 week together that you just want to throw in as much changes as possible. Like, you got to hurry because you have this uncertain endpoint and you don't know really how much time you need. We didn't know how much time we had to optimize and what magnitude of optimization we would benefit from. So the first recommendation is if you have R scripts, make sure that they work first. And talk about making them work in RStudio or RTVS. Make sure that they are functioning and that they're returning result sets that make sense. And then at this point, when you've confirmed that and you have the data set that you need to work with, so this is the other thing. We had the database from Peter Tran. We restored it. I had the scripts from, basically Justin had a set of different scripts. He had RStudio up and running. And we started doing this conveyor belt development. I would take one of the scripts that he confirmed worked. We would put it into SB execute external script within the context of the database with the 20 million rows. We would then execute it without any other changes, so just very minor changes to actually execute it, confirm that, okay, this value 1 equals this value 1 over here, and then we started doing a baseline test. So we go, okay, how much throughput can we get? Big tip here that we saw across different customers. A lot of optimization happens just from localizing your R code on the SQL Server instance. So even if you're not using the scale R package, you can benefit from a significant performance increase because you're not dragging the rows across the line and you're leveraging the SQL Server machine. So we saw a benefit out of the gate for this localizing. And then we started to weave in performance optimizations, and Justin will talk about a few of the things that we did. And then we retested, remeasured, and again, ensuring correct results along the way. So if you start throwing in 4 or 5 things and you get a scalar result setback and you go, okay, this looks right, you might be fooling yourself. You want to continually verify and make sure that something didn't get erroneously modified. All right. So with that said, Justin's going to talk about more of the process.
So this is the real before and after picture. There are some intermediate steps. It wasn't a direct from before to after directly, but I think I mentioned before the tools that we had begun with, which were, again, running on some C++ code that was generating that segmentation model. And these tools were separate tools that were not in the database, of course, so that we had to bring the data in and out. And so we took, that's kind of the starting state, and how we ended up was we're, as you can see, doing everything in the database itself. We have a set of stored procedures now that run those 3 different processes of the science, which I mentioned, the attribute selection, the segmentation, and the scoring. So each of those has a stored procedure, and we did some, as Joe was talking about, some performance optimization for each of those steps as well. So as you can see, everything in the database, certainly gave us the ability to improve quite a bit with performance. So this is the kind of the more intermediate before and after. So what I'm showing here on the left, it's not as important that you read the text so much as it is that you see the environment that I'm starting in, which is RStudio, which is a very common IDE for working with R. It's my IDE of choice for sure. But as Joe mentioned, you could do this also with RTools in Visual Studio. And so what I have here is, as Joe mentioned, I would do the R coding in RStudio, make sure that I was getting the result that I expected. And I'm also, at this point, I'm utilizing the SQL Server compute context, even in RStudio. What I'm showing you as far as the movement is afterwards, I can actually be in T-SQL, and I can take that R script and just plop it right in, right? So, I didn't want to do that. It's just that simple. Yep. So the red text that you see is R code. It's embedded in that T-SQL. So you've got to set it up as the SP execute external script, that command that Joe was referencing. But again, that's really what it entails. So you've gotten your R code to a certain point, and you can move it in with your T-SQL. And then you can create a stored procedure out of it, and that's what we did. So we have three stored procedures that look like something like this, and it's easy as that. So how did we see such tremendous improvement? I think Joe mentioned that we were able to take a process that took several days, and we were able to get it down to under an hour. So, a lot of that had to do with improvements on the attribute selection. The attribute selection was a very intensive process because, again, what you're thinking about this problem, we have potentially attributes in the hundreds, right? Hundreds of attributes that we're considering. And we're trying to whittle it down to what are the 10 significant ones. So again, thinking about all the combinations of things that you can consider, that problem blows up very quickly. So that's definitely our most computationally intensive process that we have. And we were able to get that down to run in 45 minutes. And I'll tell you about a little bit more about how we achieved that as far as what process we were using, what functions we were using. The segmentation model, we were able to get that down to run in 5 minutes, and then the scoring, which we were doing as a batch process. So you can imagine a set of, a batch of transactions comes in at a time, and I'm going to score them all together. So again, all of these three things we were able to see tremendous improvement with. And, as I mentioned, very important that we were getting valid results. So it's not so simple as just saying, oh, it runs quickly, it's great. Let me actually look at the predictions that it's making and make sure that it's doing what we expect. So, again, as we said with the workflow, having the DBA and myself and then with Joe and Denzel, Joe working with me really on the R side of things, and Denzel working with Peter on the performance optimization. So all that pipeline, that flow that we discussed was really crucial, I think, to the success of this. So how did we do it? It would be easy to just stop the story there and say, hey, it was great. We saw 100x performance improvement. My day is done, right? But how did we do it? So one big thing was leveraging the compute resources of the SQL Server instance, not of my local or even of some other server that doesn't have the same capabilities of doing that, and also not moving the data around. It certainly is a huge benefit. Leveraging those scale R functions that Joe was referencing, so taking what I was doing previously and trying to map that to existing functions in that scale R environment. So these libraries that have the RX prefix, that indicates those are the scale R libraries. So again, these are these parallelizable, highly scalable algorithms that Microsoft designed specifically for the purpose of dealing with large data sets and doing the things that R on its own in the open source world couldn't handle. So that was another key element of the solution as well. And then once we identified the appropriate sets of functions, so okay, we're using the RX deforest library and these others, once we selected those libraries, it was really just a matter of fine-tuning the parameters of the functions themselves. So, and I'll talk about those parameters a little bit, as far as the batch sizes of the data that was flowing, and then how many nodes were we utilizing, and these sorts of things. So I'll give you a little bit of a flavor of some of the performance results that we were seeing. So this is for the first library, the RxD Forest, which we were using for our attribute selection. It's building a random forest model, which I won't get into very much detail about here. Certainly happy to get into that at another point. But we're using a random forest for that. And what we were trying to do is figure out what the appropriate number of trees, so it's a forest that consists of trees, so what the proper number of trees was for the forest. So essentially, how many models did I need to generate? And finding that sweet spot was really important because we could say, oh, let's just generate 1,000 trees. Well, do we really need 1,000 trees to get a stable answer? So that was the question, right? I needed to figure out where we sort of saw that invariance with respect to the results, but we were also seeing that things were performing really well. So we found that around 30 trees, we were able to get the results in, again, 45 minutes that we were able to get results. And the jump from 30 trees to 50 trees when I was actually evaluating the results themselves, really didn't see a whole lot of a difference between them. So we found that 30 trees was ideal. But again, this will vary depending on the data that you have. So results may vary. RX forest also with the number of tasks, so the number of nodes that we were using, we found that 8 nodes was optimal for us. We didn't see much benefit to bumping it up to 16. We played around with different combinations of things. But once we had decided on 30 trees, it was how many nodes did we need to spin up?
And threads. So 8 threads. On one machine, which is a nice benefit. So.
That's why we bring him in, not the data scientists, talk about nodes and threads. Okay. Now, the RxDTree library, which is for our segmentation model, again, it was figuring out the number of threads that was appropriate. And again, we found a sweet spot around 8 threads. Didn't see much benefit beyond that for this particular data set.
Great. So thread designation. And by the way, I mentioned a lot of the benefit was from just getting it onto the server. And then we had further optimizations through using the ScaleR equivalents. We've had other customers where they just brought in their open source R, and it worked well out of the box, and they stopped there. One other customer, for example, had very small models. So in the case where Justin's working with 20 million rows, this customer was working with 100, maybe 101 rows, I think was the exact. And it didn't make sense to use ScaleR because the open source equivalent worked just good enough for their needs, and they saw benefits. All right, so some overall tips for migrations, and some of the lessons were learned from ProZinc, and then some were learned across different customers. The first thing was, and you see this implied in this talk, it's important to get the statisticians or scientists in the same room, as the DBA or data architect. So just being able to talk and go, does this look valid, and can we help each other out? And we saw a lot of teams start to talk for the first time and now have successful relationships ongoing where they're now in communication and they're aware of their efforts, their shared data sets, and their advanced analytics scenarios. I already mentioned the validity of the script, so making sure that start with an R script that's working. Again, it sounds obvious, but there are cases where we had customers where it was broken somehow along the way, and then we were troubleshooting it within SBExecute external script. And Jimmy, you had kind of a note of, hey, was it as easy as that? There are some scenarios where what we did with ProZinc, it was copy-paste because we were pulling each result set using ScaleR equivalents, so it was very easy to go from RStudio. If you're doing something that's not ScaleR equivalent, you might have to adjust what the names of the input data sets are. So you might have to do a tweak here and there of a line of code, but it's still very minimal. Certainly not the same extreme as going from R to C++ or Java. In terms of making one change at a time, we talked about that. Leveraging optimizations on both sides. So if there's a T-SQL equivalent, if you're a data architect and not familiar with R but are interested, this is a great way to do it. I had one customer give us a 700-line script, and I just chewed through it one bit at a time and would ask questions about, okay, what does this function do, and can we do a more optimized equivalent of T-SQL? And vice versa, if you have scenarios that you can port over to R, there's opportunities there. In terms of being specific, so we have, I bet for the DBAs in the room, you've heard of the select star argument, like don't use select star. There's all kinds of ways that it can break your code later on down the road. And from a data science perspective, we found the same lesson. So if you are ingesting result sets, for example, select star for use in R, we have one example, it's called RX create call info. And it basically creates a list of column values. So you designate the columns and their values so that they can be designated as factors when we pull the data. And we did a select star. It took 13 hours. Luckily, we kicked it off as we were leaving at 6 p.m. that night. We came in, we thought, oh, this is still running. And then we realized of this very wide table, so hundreds of columns, we really only needed six or seven of them. And so switching it to six or seven, it went down to 5 minutes. So a lot of the virtues that you know from a data architecture perspective of don't put select star everywhere, it applies as well in the R world. So be very specific and very precise and add just the attributes that you need for that particular operation. Even if that's the legacy code that you're getting from a statistician, start asking questions about that. Flag how specific that code is. And then we talked about your results will vary based on data characteristics. So you're going to see recommendations in this next blog post from SQL Cat. And I would just ask that you understand that one size does not fit all. So you may have different parameters. For example, there's a batching parameter where it says, okay, I want to work with 50,000 row chunks for, and I think that's the default right now, 50,000 row chunks for a specific forest algorithm. But it might be that 100,000 rows for your particular data set or 200,000 rows for your data set is the optimal sweet spot. So feel free to experiment with that once you have the semantic correctness of the overall workflow. So once everything's working, you've benchmarked it, then start experimenting with these different arguments. All right, and by the way, one other quick one that's not on the slide. We found that there are different arguments like bucket counts or iterations, and Justin was pointing to this a little bit earlier, where what is good enough to get the result that you need without adding an extra 10 hours? So it's a cost benefit of, okay, I could get the most precise and accurate model on Earth, but is it worth the 10 hours of processing versus I can get good enough at 1 hour? Like the optimizer, exactly, thanks. All right, so final call to action, and I think we have 3 minutes left for questions, but I'll be here and I'm happy to discuss this with you as is Justin. I've kept it very simple. There's a link to the SQL Cat blog, and it's aka.ms/early-sql-r. And again, it's a blog post, but it's a mini white paper, and it really is meant to help both the scientist, data scientist, and the actual database administrator architect. So if you're not at all familiar with R, this is a great place to start. If you're not at all familiar with SQL Server, this is a great way to find out how we've integrated R into SQL Server. And again, we've seen a lot of really strong results across several customers. By the way, PASS will be doing a similar talk, and we'll have an additional customer, Greenfield Advisors, giving their story. And this blog is the culmination of multiple customer engagements, and I definitely recommend you check that out. And feel free to stop by afterwards. We have 2 minutes. If anybody has any questions, you can go to the microphones. Or if you don't want to run, Jimmy, I can. Yeah, here we go. Yeah.
An observation and a question.
Yes.
It just strikes me this is like the wild, wild west. And like you said, so much of this is common sense.
Yeah.
As you know, now I work for a company that does Flash.
Yep.
So many of our best practices are tried and true fundamentals.
Okay, so I'll. Let me repeat the comment, and then when you have the question. So Jimmy May says, look, it seems like a lot of this is Wild West, but that there's also some common sense practices in here. And I would say, yeah, there are a lot of opportunities where you have two worlds getting to know each other, and there's a lot of benefit to it. And then Jimmy's now running to the microphone to ask the actual question. So.
Quick question.
Yeah.
This seems like a very, very exciting opportunity.
Yes. Right.
Very proud and very good to work with, by the way. He does some great work. But is it going to stop here? I'm really seriously thinking about the next step of my career being a foray into R and data science.
Yeah.
But I don't want to be a misstep.
Yeah, so if I could paraphrase, is it worth my investment or are we going to stop here? And the answer is no. And there's a lot of investment. And if you saw the keynote and even talking to Justin from his perspective, from a scientist perspective, we're definitely in this, and we're just getting started. So there's a lot of opportunities. Bob Ward has been speaking about SQL Server R services a lot, and there's a lot of opportunities from a DBA data architect perspective just waiting to be built. Question over there, would you be able to do a mic, please? Thank you. Great. Yeah, so paraphrasing the question, are there samples that you can work with so you can get hands-on with attribute selection segmentation? Now, we don't use exact prose code, but at the end of that blog, are a lot of exercises that you can go through, and they go through all the canonical examples, including the idea of generating models and then storing them and then using them for scoring. So that if you follow that post, there's a section for exercises and hands-on exercises.
I'm really interested in the optimization somehow.
Okay, well, I'm happy to talk to you after, and you're welcome to also visit the PROS website, and we have some white papers there that you can take a look at, pros.com, so I'm happy to speak with you as well about it.
Great. Well, we really appreciate you being here. It's the last 6 seconds, so thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you.
Take care.